Governor's Cup champions. And no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of Mayor's Bread has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's Live Full report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABread.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them, is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Sirius XM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Back 90 minutes into this Monday that is, for the most part, being devoted to appreciations for Bob Neumeier. There's just too many people that we know can share thoughts and tributes and experiences. Rich Migliori is joining us, and here's another. Horse racing person that is a hockey fan, and probably if asked to pick second favorite endeavor of sport, would say hockey. Rich, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Yeah, oh gosh, yeah, huge Ranger fan. Been enjoying how they're playing. Exciting, a lot of youth, a lot more grit. It would be in probably this order: horse racing, hockey, boxing.
Well, and that you know, some old school kind of activity when it comes to that, and yeah, that's true, right? We've talked plenty of boxing as well. Well, you must have over the years crossed paths with Bob.
Yeah, you know, I don't. Didn't know him as well as many of the other people that you've been speaking with this morning, but I got to do one small hit for NBC, but long before I was really not ready. You know, I got thrown in the deep end of the pool, and I mean, it was a little short hit, but he couldn't have been nicer. He couldn't have been more of a gentleman. And the one thing that I always took away from when I would see him at the track is he just seemed to have a genuine enthusiasm for the game. Like it came across. It wasn't something that you felt like he was forcing or trying. He seemingly, to me, always just enjoyed being there. You could see he was in his element, and it was, you know, somebody that would always brighten your day when you did run into him.
Yeah, no, that's it's because he, you know, he took an interest, and he was one of those people that, you know, when they were, he asked you about yourself or what, you know, what you've been doing, if you hadn't seen him in a while, he was sincere. It wasn't a, you know, just a, you know, he wasn't going through the motions.
Not at all. You know, and like I always just appreciated that part of it, that, you know, he was, you know, like one of us. He was like thrilled to be, you know, a part of the show, you know.
Exactly.
So it was, you know. And, you know, I think, like, about that kind of stuff all the time. Because, like, growing up in Brooklyn, you know, you always had your favorite sports casters and different people. Obviously, like, Jim McKay was always huge on my list. But, you know, we didn't have access to these kind of people. And then because of racing, you know, I could get to know a guy like Bob Neumeier. And not that we were dear friends or anything, but he knew who I was. And we'd say hi and exchange pleasantries. I always got a kick out of that. Like, I'm just this kid from, you know, Coney Island Avenue in Brooklyn. And, you know, somebody of his stature in as a TV analyst who actually knows me, you know, I always got a kick out of that.
Well, exactly, and I've explained to Jay and Kenny Rice and Billy Rappaport that and Michael Blowen, I when the Whalers, you know, when they started in Boston, WHA, it wasn't that, you know, tuned into them. It was when they came to Hartford, when they moved, that, you know, it was hard not to take an interest. And I before they got here, I was a Sabre fan, and I'm still a Sabre fan. But, you know, we certainly, and of course they were in the WHA until the merger. And so, you know, you could be a Whaler fan too. And he was the voice of the Whalers. And so, you know, he's one of those, you know, one of those kinds of transistor radio era voices in your head that you listen to. And so to then, you know, years later, get a chance to meet him and have him on this show, it was always special. And I conveyed that to him. You know, I know the first time we met, and you know, my admiration.
But isn't that one of the great things about thoroughbred racing and sport in general? But obviously, because we're so immersed in thoroughbred racing, that I can better equate it to racing. It's like the great equalizer that you get to meet all different kinds of people from all walks of life, celebrity to racetrack characters to, you know, I mean, like, for me, I was always just thrilled meeting Eddie Sweat for the first time, who had rubbed Secretariat, and getting to meet Jack Klugman in the paddock at Aqueduct. You know what I mean? It's such a cross-section of life, and it like, kind of brings us all together on the same level. We're all just, you know, have a shared passion and looking for the next winner or whatever it may be.
Yep.
But it's that's one of the most wonderful things about thoroughbred racing.
I've said that for as long as I've been doing this, and even, you know, even before I had the opportunity to express my thoughts as regularly as I do about the game. And in terms of a moment where that came into perspective for me personally was, I always use Ciro's from years ago, you know, back when it was, the atmosphere was, I mean, electric, and you know what I'm talking about, you know, going back. You could be at that bar in the backyard right after the races, especially as you trickled out of the, you know, the backyard and across Lincoln, and at that tent bar, I always explain that you could have somebody that was obviously spent the day in the clubhouse, might still have the clubhouse sticker on their the lapel of their, you know, summer suit jacket, and the guy is tapped out, and there's a guy in shorts and a shirt that's got a wad of money that's buying drinks for everybody, including the guy in the suit. And that, it's the, you say, great equalizer. I mean, it's one of those things. And that's a big part of it. But, you know, the, and that's the beauty also of the parimutuel system, because we're playing against each other. And, yeah, the house gets a cut and so forth. But we each have our, you know, our moments in the sun that way, and it's great about, that's one of the great aspects of the game, no doubt.
Yeah. I mean, I think about that often. I literally have had the opportunity to dine with Kings and been at picnic tables on the backstretch of Saratoga.
Exactly.
With grooms that are dear friends with me to this day, and that is, to me, very, very special.
Yeah. We'll continue with appreciations for Bob Neumeier after we talk to Richie. And Rich, I caught you a fair amount over the weekend, and some thoughts about it was kind of a mixed bag weekend. Obviously, we got horses getting ready for Breeders' Cup, and that's obviously, you know, a big part of the overview. But the racing's been just terrific, with big fields and some interesting results.
I think the racing's been great. And, you know, one thing that I keep on going back to is just how many two-year-old races we're running. We've had a lot of maiden, you know, maybe they're a little late at getting ready this year. And I actually, this is my personal opinion. I don't know if this is fact, but, you know, because of COVID, I think a lot of the two-year-olds maybe didn't get started as early as they might have. But I like this late influx of all these maiden races, these baby races that we're having, you know, 3-4 a day at this point. And I think that's, you know, to me, that's always exciting. I get a big kick out of that.
Well, and we're getting, you know, we're getting them. We've had long on, you know, long on the grass and short and main track. And I was actually surprised. I think it was Saturday, because when I wrote it up, it not that it caught me by surprise, but you know, next Saturday is the state bred
showcase,
we got showcase coming up, and on this past Saturday we had, I think, at least three, maybe even a fourth maiden early in the card, a maiden claimer, there were three maiden special weights that. In fact, I'm looking now. Actually, one was Open Company, the one that that nostalgic blasted to a win, the 2-year-old fillies going long on the main. But you had state bred that Bally Shade for Rudy in the nightcap, and there was also the state bred 6 furlong on the main with the Leaban Kenner that won the. That won the, that was the 5th or 6th. Anyway, there was, when I was writing things up, it the carryover sequence. And so you had, you know, you had to work your way through those maiden races.
How about the maiden of Jay Provenzanos? Did a Cupid's Heart. Did you get a whole look at her? I mean, she was like incredible. She broke
yesterday.
Very slow.
Yeah. Came running.
And like, I was super impressed with that effort. I mean, she basically made two runs just to get back into the race, and then she had a run to finish. I thought that was really eye catching.
That was a very interesting group, and I'll tell you why. When I was handicapping, it was three state bred maidens. There was Massetta. For Linda Rice, that started the pick six carryover sequence. Then there was Cupid's Heart, and then there was the nightcap, that Silver Fist. But that race with Cupid's Heart, there were two horses from the workout report that I mentioned this. In fact, I'm going to pull it up because I make it easier for me to give the specifics, because there were two horses. It was a very difficult, I thought, race to negotiate. And here it is. Here's what I said. more state breds, this time short on the main, and it's another murky picture. At least half the field, 3, 5, 6, 8, 9, feels eligible for success based on experience, the 3, 6, 8. Positive clocker observations, the 5 and the 9, and then back to the 8 for pedigree, the Mark Hennig, and that the other debut runners from McPeak, Motion, and Maselli, you know, those are three solid outfits. So it was a very tough way to start the pick four. And that Liberty Flame, you wouldn't necessarily immediately think that you know, that was the Randy Brassard, right? No, the Pat Quick. Yeah. The Pat Quick.
No, Pat Quick, the filly on the outside.
Yes.
Dylan Davis, yeah.
You thought to yourself, well, this horse could run well, and it's just tough to, you know, think that you know, it's going to beat the rest of this field. And Dylan, you know, made that move, and he did nothing wrong, I don't think, to, you know, to gain control of that race. But then here came Cupid's Heart, like she was shot out of a gun.
Yeah, but, you know, but what was even more impressive about Cupid's Heart is so she gets left. And she immediately jumps in the bit. Like, she knew what she wanted to do. She just got out of the gate a little slow. Took Javier Castellano, like, basically dragged him up into the race. He made up about 6-7 lengths in the first 3 furlongs. And then he stopped her. He was like, whoa, because she was going to blow by the field before the quarter pole. And he made her sit there for a little bit. And then they turned forward. She jumped to Eileen. She kicked on again. So she made two distinct moves. I mean, it's very rare to see any horse, you know, let alone a young horse, first time out. Like, if she would have tired at that point and finished third or fourth, you would have said, "Wow, you know, that's a nice filly. We'll keep an eye on her going forward." The fact that she went ahead and finished the deal after all that, I was super impressed.
Well, and here, you know, as I said, the five and the nine were the two firsters that had real glowing clocker notes. And here's the most recent note from the two of them. Cupid's Heart picked her up at the half and did not look like she was going that fast, but my watch read 47-4, and she continues on with good energy past the wire. And when it came to the Pat Quick, Liberty Flame drew off by 5 lengths from 5-year-old Parade Field from the 3/8 in 11-1 and 35-2. Or 35-1, and went out another quarter mile in 101-3. Philly is talented. Those two end up being the exacta. And this was a very, very difficult group to, you know, to make your decisions on, especially for the pick six, because you had the horse of Mark Hennig's out of that stake mare, too. Summer Snow had every right to be nice.
Right.
In her second start?
You know, you just said something that like, so when Tony Black goes, it's not how fast you're going, it's how you're going fast. Right? Clocker says, look down at his watch, doesn't look like she's doing anything. And
exactly.
Boy, she's rolling. Now, I've got a guy busting my chops every day at Belmont. What does that mean? It's a yogiism. That doesn't mean anything. No, that's exactly what it means. That
right.
If a horse is doing it properly, and I can't get it through this guy, and I got to be honest, he's on my nerves at this point.
Well, it might, you know, you might need to take a you know, maybe a 5-minute major, maybe a boarding, maybe a.
those days are over for me.
Well, I'm like,
and I even stopped and was polite and I tried to explain it, and he's going, "Oh, that's a yogiism. It doesn't mean anything." I, you know, like, all right, okay. Just leave me alone, please.
Now, the pick six sequence, I mean, was brutal. And then, you know, it's funny. And you guys all talk about it. Andy does, and when the handicapping portion, Jonathan. In fact, I think Jonathan even mentioned it yesterday on a race I was watching about how a horse at a certain morning line, you know, you're not that interested. And then when the betting, you know, seriously starts, you go back to Friday, and Rustler, I think, was 8-1 morning line, 10-1 morning line, and was absolutely a horse that, you know, that could be considered. But there were others that seemed like you had to, you know, prefer others more. But then somehow he gets away at 21-1. And when you at eight or ten to one, you're thinking, all right, I could use him. At 20-1, he's a terrific play. And next thing you know, Kendrick wires with him.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think again the racing's been just tremendous. I love the fact that we got all these 2-year-old races right now, and you know, we're getting towards Breeders' Cup. We still got Showcase Day, and
yeah,
it's been a lot of fun to cover. You know, America's Day at the Races has been a blast. Everybody's, you know, working hard at it. You know, I say this all the time, but I can't overstate it. The people that work behind the scenes on these shows,
sure,
are amazing, and they work tireless to make these things, you know, as good as they are, and they don't get nearly the credit that they deserve. If it wasn't for them, you know, we wouldn't look nearly as good as at least I hope we look.
No, absolutely. For those that somehow made it through this sequence. The pick six on Saturday with the carryover, it ended up being 500,000 what was the final? 258. 500 was the pick five. Pick five came back 2,400. The pick six was 32,547. And very, very difficult, I'll tell you. It's been, I had a good week going into Friday, and Friday card at Belmont, and then Saturday both Belmont and Keeneland, I took a licking. I gave back quite a bit that I had accrued midweek.
Well, you know, this is a lesson I've been learning, because, you know, I got my Naira Bets account. I never had an account like that before. I enjoy it, but then I wind up betting races that, like, you know, I'm halfway looking at. I'm like, okay, well, we've got Australia's going on in the middle of the night, and I'll start betting exactas off the looks. And I'm giving back the profit that I made. Like, I got to stay disciplined. Like,
disciplined.
Yeah, I should be as strict with that as I was with my diet when I was riding. I literally, just this past week, like, took it in hand and said, wait, when you really like one, that's when you open the account, make your wager, and if not, lay out. And actually, I had a great weekend doing it that way.
No, exactly. You got to be judicious. What did you make of public sector, who now is on a real roll?
You know, I think that he's a horse that has been doing just enough, especially watching him in the Hill Prince. You could see Irad has so much confidence that he's got the horse inside him, and the horse of Todd's was finishing under Kendrick. But you can see it's like hands and heels until he gets like a neck in front, and then he just reminds him, because it looks like he might idle a little bit. So he might be a horse that's actually winning with more or less than we realize, because the margin of victories aren't so big. Horses that hold their form like that, obviously it's a testimony to Chad Brown and the job he does, but you know how hard it is for horses to string together A efforts and winning efforts. And he works out trips because he gets in hand. He takes his rider. He helps his rider. Horses that run off the bridle or lazy, they're very hard to gauge and hard to get those kind of trips. He's a horse that he helps his rider a great deal.
4 wins in 2 seconds in 6 starts this year, and he's literally, you know, in the Manila, a head away from having a win streak of 5 straight races, and now has amassed the Grade 2 Hall of Fame, the Grade 3 Saranac, and now the Grade 2 Hill Prince. And this is a Kingman, and obviously for Seth Klarman. And in fact, we talked to Chad, a week ago, and or 2 weeks ago now, but you know, he was just back from Tattersall's, and this has become that whole concept of finding horses that that are away from most people's view. Just another, you know, another feather in the cap, essentially.
But isn't that the great thing too? Like you think about how the game's changed over the years, and the world has gotten smaller because of technology.
Sure.
Like you can watch replays now from Europe and look at different things, and there's different pipelines. But that it still keeps evolving. I remember, you know, when I was under contract to Steve DeMauro, David McKibben was one of the first guys that was going to Europe scouting horses that he thought would do in America. And he brought a horse named Chunajinsky Colts, Current Charge, and Russian Fox, who did phenomenal here. He picked up a Damascus Colt, Imperial Dilemma, who wound up being a heck of a dirt sprinter here. And he, you know, was kind of ahead of the curve. But now we've come, you know, we're talking about 40 years later. What Chad and Seth Klarman are doing was kind of ahead of the curve, and now people have jumped on that bandwagon. It's just interesting how somebody figures out a new way to approach this game and is a little bit ahead of everybody else, but then everybody else goes, hey, that's a great idea. Let's go to Tattersalls. Let's get this European blood. Let's get a hold of some Kingman, you know, Frankels or whatever. But I was thinking about that a lot driving home yesterday, how it's different because it's a little easier to get the information now, but people, sharp people, like a David McKibben, like a Seth Klarman, like a Chad Brown, are still figuring out ways to do it and constantly evolving with it.
Well, and I did see. I think this morning's America's Best Racing. You know, every day you get a missive that's got the content that's up on their website, and I saw the headline. I haven't gone to the article yet, but it said how Winningham, you know, stayed successful for five decades, and part of that is the ability to adapt and to, you know, recognize the flow, and that includes blood stock. I talk about this with Sid, you know, the ability to see how bloodlines are changing and the way that market moves, that part of it, look at from a horseman standpoint, look at Shug's ability to take the kind of bloodstock that he was getting, particularly from the Phippses over the last 15 years. And, he took horses that ended up being strong from a mile and beyond on the grass, after years of success with famous Hall of Fame dirt horses. And then all of a sudden he's winning with Point of Entry and Boisterous and Data Link and these horses that were slower to develop and needed to go long on the grass. You have to be able to bob and weave. There's your boxing.
Absolutely. But, and you think about, you brought up Charlie Whittingham with, South American horses and like the, he was bringing horses from different places and had those connections, and it's a constant revamping and evolution, and the best people do it consistently. I mean, you talk about Shug McGee, what he does on a consistent basis. Of course, listen, you're talking about the deepest pedigrees in our game in North America, but still to be able to develop those horses consistently over time, and they get better and better and better. It's we're privileged. I think sometimes we almost take it for granted because we're, I won't say immune to it, but we see it every day.
Well, it's a privilege to enjoy the game presented on America's Day at the Races, and Thursday, Friday, leading into Showcase Day on Saturday. Rich, looking forward, looking ahead, and two more good cards Thursday and Friday, and we'll talk to you next week, and we'll have. At that point, we'll have pre-entries still. Next Monday will be full-fledged entries, and fields will be finalized. But appreciate it, and we'll talk to you next week.
Looking forward to it, Steve.
Absolutely.
I'll be at the Ranger game on Friday night at the Garden, and I'll be at the Rangers Islanders on the 25th at the new UBS Arena. So, and I'll be on my couch watching tonight. So let's go Rangers, and I'll talk to you next week.
See, he's going to give you Let's Go Rangers, and Mike Welch, who's standing by, he's not going to accept that. Rich Migliori, everybody. Thanks a lot, Richie. Coming into our third hour today, and we'll spend the last hour here the way we started, really, the first half of the show, paying tribute to Bob Neumeier, and Mike Welch can appreciate him from being around the racetrack and then specifically from being a Bostonite. And Mike, really a very sad day yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, I knew Bob had fallen into... And I still call him Bob. I sometimes knew me, sometimes Bob. But either way, he was a great guy. I knew he had fallen into bad health over the last couple of months. I have a good friend who's always in close contact with Neumi over the years, and he kind of informed me that a couple of months ago. It was just sad to hear, unfortunately. I do have another friend who I was actually out to dinner with last night, who grew up with Bob in Weymouth, Mass, and they went to high school together. And he did tell me that about 4 months ago, they had a reunion of sorts that Bob was able to attend, and they said they had a tremendous time. So it was good to hear that that at least that had transpired, but. Neumeier was a good friend, and it was just great to just hang around and just talk handicapping with him, talk racing with him. He was so enthused by it that you just see it perk up whenever we got in one of those discussions. Sometimes a little heated over some opinions on stuff, but Bob was very opinionated on a lot of issues with the sports, and not all good ones, but. He made a lot of good points, and we didn't always agree. But one thing I'd always agree on is he was a terrific handicapper, and he loved nothing more than spending a day at the races, probably not working, just hanging out, in the grandstand with his figures, trying to bet winners.
Share some thoughts, Mike, about beyond, obviously rubbing elbows, going back to, the early part of your career, Suffolk and Rockingham, but also, you had to, I'm going to assume you were still in Boston and in New England while he was on television and WBZ.
Yeah, I didn't really know Neumi that well. Back in the day, I just knew him as the guy on Channel 4
who did
the sports with Bob Lobel and did an unbelievably, just tremendous job. I just assumed, when Bob finally Bob Lobel retired, Neumi would take over that spot, and I don't think that quite ever happened. But the work he did, the pieces he did, were just exceptional. So that's how I first knew him, and not personally, or not even as a race tracker, but as a guy that was a terrific handicapper. I just knew him as that guy on Channel 4, who was like spectacular. I used to love to watch, both those guys. Bob Lobel was a kind of an icon himself, and Neumi was like his right hand guy, but every bit as terrific. Maybe a little bit different styles, but nobody reported a sports story better than Neumi did back in those days. And Boston was, it is still now, but back then were quite a hotbed for sports. You had Larry Bird, obviously, and Bobby Orr, and the Pats, and then, of course, the Red Sox, and through all their trials and tribulations. Those were back in the days when, winning a World Series was the dream of every person that lived in Boston for 50 years, and hadn't happened at that point. But, Bob told the stories just so well.
You started to encounter him at what point at the track?
I think I first met him through my friend, because they, he was actually a roommate of mine in college. Like I said, they went to school together, and Neumi was the manager on my buddy's. They were actually the state champions, the Weymouth, back in the years when Bob was in high school, and he was the manager on the team. And his father was a mutual clerk at. at Suffolk Downs during what I thought was the heyday of Suffolk Downs back in the 80s and such. So, yeah, I think I'm trying to recall, that's where I first met him, you know, through my friend out at the track. And then, you know, of course, as our careers paths started crossing at the big races, you know, we would just sit down or I'd meet him out in the paddock, you know, in between his gigs, and we would just discuss, you know, who we liked and, you know, what we thought about the Derbies and the Breeders' Cups that were coming up.
He loved to bet, and Eddie Olchek's going to join us next, Mike. And
speaking of, just want to say to Richard Migliori, I was at the Panthers Islanders game last week, where the Panthers crushed the Islanders here down in Florida, and his Rangers going to have to go a long way maybe to beat out the Panthers this year. I think Vinny Viola has a good chance of getting that dream of his. Winning the Derby is one thing, but winning the Stanley Cup, that might even be a notch above. And they got a pretty good club this year.
Well, it's got to eat at them that that the Lightning managed to to be as competitive as they've been.
Yeah, that was tough last year. You know, they happened to have to play the Lightning in the first round of the playoffs, but they've made some changes. I think they've got a better team this year. They've had another. You know, they got another year under their belt under their coach, who was, I think, the best coach in the league. And you could just see the difference in them, the way they're playing. Their goaltending, at least through the first early games, seems better than it was last year. And they've added that rookie from Boston College, I believe, Knight, and he's now the backup goalie. And I think that's a big help too. But there's a lot of talent. You know, not going to predict now they're going to win the Stanley Cup, but I think they've got a pretty good chance maybe of knocking off Tampa this year. We'll see. They beat them once already, so we'll see how things go. But I'm like Rich. I love going out there to the rink and watching the games live in person. It's a lot of fun.
Well, and it's amazing how it could bring Grenig, and he's another hockey / horse racing guy.
Another Ranger guy got to deal with. But, yeah, no, they're all passionate about it. And Jay Pridman, too. Jay loves
the
Kings.
Jay, go Kings, go.
Loves the Kings more than Jay.
Go Kings, go.
So, although I did lose a little bet with Jay on the Red Sox Astros series. He's an Astro fan by marriage. And,
that's right. That's right. He married into the Astros.
Yeah. So I owe him a dinner when we get to Del Mar. So. I know he's looking forward to cashing in on at least that bet. Might be the only bet he cashes throughout the Breeders' Cup, but it might be the best one for him, getting that free dinner.
Mike, speaking of which, haven't had a chance to check in with you. Pre-entries came today. Bring everybody up to speed on your Breeders' Cup division. You always have the sprint. How does it shape up when those pre-entries open up later today?
Yeah, I haven't seen the official pre-entry list. I mean, no. It looked like a field. It may not be a full field this year as you had in other years. I mean, at least among the main contenders, there's probably six or eight, though, that you can put a finger on and say if Jackie's Warrior stubs his toe, he's obviously the horse to beat. There's a lot of options for those looking for an alternative to Jackie's Warrior. I'll be out at Del Mar on Thursday morning for the first time. I've been watching some of these works, obviously, on tape. I watched Jackie's Warrior. He's had two serious works. Santa Anita, the one the other day, I thought was excellent. They work him by himself. They obviously don't want him to do too much, but especially in the first two works he had out there. The one the other day, though, he looked full of run through the wire, galloping out. I had him galloping out on my watch, just watching off the tape, in 6 furlongs and 14. And he did it easy, and he also did it through some traffic. There was a lot of horses galloping in front of him as he was coming to the wire, and he kind of had to keep his focus. They weren't too far off the rail, and he had a slip inside. So, but he looks to be doing, you know, just fine, coming off that easy, almost a workout-like victory in the Gallant Bob. And, you know, the question will be the pace scenario. I mean, how easy or not easy will he have it up front? Mark Glatt told me that even though Dr. Schivel went wire to wire in the Santa Anita sprint that they don't really want him on the lead, that was more a factor of the rain breaking and Fabian Pratt not having the control over him he wanted early on. But, you know, you've got almost like Special Reserve has speed and Ferenc Fire has some speed. Following C, still up in the air. He went wire-to-wire in the Vosburgh. I don't know if a decision's been made on him one way or the other yet off his work the other day. The last I just spoke to Todd, he just said that they were going to reserve that final decision until after his work on Friday. The interesting horse might be Aloha West, who's come a long way in a short time. Looks like has the right running style if he can get a little help up front, trainer Wayne Catalano. But this is a horse that's really on top of his game right now and does seem to be sitting on an even better one. You got CZ Rocket, obviously, coming back again in the sprint after finishing second last year. It's an interesting race, but, you know, all signs point to Jackie's Warrior. We'll see if Steve Asbjørnsen can win the race one more time.
Well, and some of the other names that are likely to be on the sheet on Wednesday, Mucho from John Ortiz, yes. And Lexatonian,
Flagstaff.
Right?
Yep.
Flagstaff, yep. Firenze Fire, following C, Flagstaff, CZ Rocket. There you go. Aloha West, Dr. Shivel, Special Reserve, and Jackie's Warrior. Seems like that's been
a
very stable.
I've been tracking about 10 of them. You know, every once in a while, something comes out of the woodwork that you just don't even think about from one of the smaller tracks. Or, you know, I'm not even sure if the Japan's got Rice and Matera Sky. I don't know what that horse is doing again this year. But these are the main ones. I don't think anything is going to, you know, come out and join the field that's going to have an impact over these major ones. And again, you know, if the field gets a little larger than post position draw, it's always a factor in the sprint. And you know, a lot of these guys will be holding their breath, not wanting to join. Draw the rail. I'm sure Steve Asbjørnsen will be leading that group, but we'll see. I mean, the sprint's always one of my, you know, not only do I cover it, but it's one of my favorite races to watch. It's always a lot of fun, and I look forward to it being that way again this year.
Mike, I appreciate it. We'll look forward to seeing you. I'll be there for Sunday morning, and we'll get some through the binocular reports. Breeders' Cup week. And
yeah, we have our presence a lot of places, too, for the Clocker Report.
Yeah.
You know, we've had Toby out at Santa Anita. We've got Mike Vesey and Dave Grenning in New York. And I actually had Donald Harris out at Churchill and a little, I think maybe he even got over to Keeneland on Sunday. But he was at Churchill Saturday for all the big works there. So,
excellent.
As usual, the report should be pretty complete by the time we get it all together for Breeders' Cup weekend.
Thank you. And thanks for the thoughts about Numi.
Yeah, I'm glad you had me on. He was a good friend. We lost a great guy. We lost a great guy. And Sammy Spears, too, unfortunately.
That's right. I haven't even gotten to that.
The same weekend. You know, I knew him well. I used to do his show, so it was sad to hear that news, too.
Well, we'll get to him as well. Mike Welch, everybody. DRF Welch. And be sure to be tracking Mike with everything leading into Breeders' Cup. We'll follow Mike's visit. More hockey. It's tough to get away from the horse racing / hockey connection because Eddie Olczyk is joining us now. Eddie, so sorry about Numi.
Yeah, Steve, thank you for having me. It's a tough go when Numi's wife, Michelle, called me the other day. It was, you know, one of those calls when you see it come across your cell phone, you just knew. And, you know, Numi was such a terrific guy. You know, I heard Mike talking about him, and I got the fortune to know him in two venues, not only in the hockey world with him being, you know, the voice of the Boston Bruins for a bunch of years, but also being on TV there in Boston for NBC Sports Boston and knowing him through the hockey venue, but then getting a chance to be on his team and to be on our team with NBC for, you know, 4 or 5 years, however long it was that we were together. And we were kind of sidekicks, and we would, you know, travel together and do our hits and segments together and do our handicapping together, and just really got a chance to know Numi. And, you know, two passions of mine are pucks and ponies, and no different than Numi or Eric Johnson, a terrific defenseman for the Colorado Avalanche, a terrific owner, and he's got many horses. And, you know, it's kind of always been in our blood. and to have that relationship with Noumi and get a chance to know him. He was a great storyteller, Steve. I don't know if he got enough credit for that. I thought he just was an incredible storyteller, writer, you know, just the emotion and passion, and really didn't care what anybody thought about him or his opinion. He was going to tell you what he thought, and I missed getting texts from him during the hockey playoffs or, you know, once he moved on from NBC about, you know, maybe a DQ or a ride or a wager that I made that wasn't very good. Noumi was very quick to text or email and give me his opinion. And that's what I loved about him. And I just feel so bad for Michelle and for the entire Noumi family and the sports industry. I mean, he made an impact in Boston, but, you know, us in horse racing, we should feel very lucky that we had Noumi around, because he was just, he loved the game, and yeah, he loved to get his feet wet, Steve. He loved to go ahead and walk to the windows and wear out a path to those betting windows, something that I was very envious about and proud to do. But Noumi was just a terrific ambassador for our game, and we're surely going to miss him. And it was a real, real tough time that we're all going through right now.
Well, and appreciate all the NBC colleagues that have come through so far today. And talk on the handicapping front, Eddie, from a comparison purpose and from, you know, listening to, you know, to him express his thoughts, what were his strengths that as a handicapper and a player?
Yeah, I mean, he was a numbers guy, and you know, I think the one thing that I learned and tried to take from Noumi was, I mean, he was very into the European horses that would come over, whether, you know, they were, you know, a Chad horse or Grand Motion horse, or, you know, just he was very up to, I don't know if people realize that, but I mean, he was very up to speed on what was going on, you know, far away from, you know, from our little world. Like he really had a good feel for, you know, who horses were running against over there, and had a feel for being able to know when they were going to be ready to go ahead and fire on all cylinders. And, you know, like when we would work together, I mean, I remember, I think, I can't remember the year, but, you know, it was probably 5-6 years ago. And I think By the Moon was running in the Acorn, and that was my pick. And I think she was like 30-1 that day, and got beat a jump for the whole nine, you know, for the whole enchilada. And I remember Noumi just, you know, off the air, just sitting there, goes, "How could you go on that? You tell me, how can you go on national television and pick a horse that's 30-1 when the horse says she has no sod or whatever?" And, you know what I mean? You know, and then we would get on TV, and then he would just sit there, and, you know, I think I was alive to doubles and pick threes on the By the Moon. And he says, "You know what? I got to hand it to him. I respect this guy a lot, because he's got about $1,700 of losing tickets in his satchel over there." And I'm like, "What the hell is a satchel? Like, you know, I mean, is it a bag? Is it a backpack or whatever?" And I said, "Oh, by the way, thanks for selling me out, because Diana Olchek knows that I got $1,700 of tickets in my satchel." I said, "I don't even know what the hell a satchel is." But he was an outstanding handicapper. And I think we had the same philosophy, Steve, is, you know, like sometimes you got to step up and you got to take a shot, and you got to go ahead and step to the forefront and have conviction. And I think I learned even have more conviction after being around Noumi. You know, when you are playing pick fives or pick sixes or whatever, it's like, look, if you really like the horse, it doesn't matter what the odds are. The horse doesn't know what the odds are. So if you really feel that, you could go ahead and do that. But I think being around him and having many dinners with him and selling and celebrating birthdays with him, we'd always go for dinner, Steve, on the road, our NBC crew. And, you know, I know Lafitte and Kai and I and Noumi and Kenny Rice, you know, we would go out quite often when we were on the road, and Michelle, his wife, would be there. And you know, one of us, I won't tell who it is, but one of us would let the maitre d' or, you know, the restaurant know that it was Noumi's birthday. So at the end of our dinner, they would always come out with a piece of cake or, you know, and a dessert with a candle in it, and we would sing happy birthday to Noumi. And Noumi's like, "It's not my birthday." "Well, today it is." And Noumi had about 30 birthdays over the 5 years that we were together on NBC, and he'd have a big kick out of it. We'd take a picture, and I was actually going through some old pictures of it, and quite honestly hard not to shed a few tears after looking at that and going over some old texts and emails from him. But, you know, he was a very, very good handicapper and somebody that had a great feel and again, wasn't afraid to put his money where his mouth was and had a couple of real nice scores, which is always nice. But we're going to miss the man. We're going to miss the handicapper. And I'm going to miss the friend because he made a big impact on me and in my life. And, you know, pucks and ponies. We'd always share that, you know, and we would be talking either one. And we'd always venture or weave our way over to the other sport somehow. And,
sure.
You know, we're going to miss him and we're going to take care of Michelle and Numi's family.
Eddie, really appreciate it. And undoubtedly, I know last night NBC had a cut in.
Yeah,
but,
that was beautiful. They did a really nice job there with Sunday Night Football. Yeah, Mike Tirico did a wonderful job. And our boss, Sam Flood, and Rob Hyland, and Lindsay Shanzer, who oversee the horse racing, along with Billy Matthews. You know, we got the heads up that they were going to do something for Numi, and that was a real class move. He did a lot, not only for horse racing, but, you know, football and the Olympics and hockey. And, you know, I also worked with him in hockey during our early hockey days at NBC. It was our studio host that was traveling all the time. So Numi had his hand in everything, and, yeah, that was a beautiful tribute to Numi, and, you know, we're going to miss him.
Well, and I'm sure Breeders' Cup, too, they'll be undoubtedly in a couple of weeks. And start to look forward to getting to Del Mar and your coverage.
We'll look forward to it. We'll look forward to it, Steve.
Eddie, I appreciate it. Randy,
appreciate it, man. Have a great day, and thanks. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Thank Eddie Olczyk, everybody, and Randy Moss and Lafitte Bengay are going to follow. And Eddie was short for time, and I was going to do a little hockey intro for him, and we're going to reach for Randy. But I sent Casey that audio from the April 1975 WHA playoff game, and that I referenced earlier, and I put the YouTube link up, and as we reach for Randy Moss, listen to the start of a unbelievable brawl, and here's 24-year-old Bob Neumeier describing the action at the Hartford Civic Center, the Minnesota Fighting Saints, and the Whale.
Tommy, right wing corner, and we're going to have a penalty here. And now Earl and Butters and Flo, we got a fight breaking out here in the right wing corner. Earl's in there jamming the linesman in, trying to separate him. Brackenberry's in there with Earl, Flo, and Butters. Arbor grabbed by Tommy Abrahamson. Selwood and Jack Carlson have paired off. But Bill, Jack Ferreira and I talked about Bill Butters, a conspicuous absentee in period number one. But the first shift, he's out there drawing a minor penalty.
Larry
throwing some punches at Larry Plow.
Larry Plow went after him, too. And that gives you some idea if you're a regular follower of the Whalers.
Well, now Brackenberry and Selwood want to go, and here they go. Brackenberry and Selwood. Brackenberry gets two right hands. Selwood wrestling him now. 15 feet inside the line. Here's Butter sneaks a shot on Plow. Bill Butter sucker punch
Larry
Plow.
That's all. Here comes the bench.
We've got a wild ball here now. And he's in on Butters. We've got a wild brawl here at the Civic Center. Both benches empty. Al Smith involved. Players fighting everywhere inside the Saints zone. Everyone paired off for TU now in Carlson. Two players wrestling down here. It looks like Hank
Slaven, Bob. I'll tell you, that's one of the most ungentlemanly, sneaky, just plain rotten things I've ever seen. Butters came from behind. Came up behind Plow and cold cocked him from behind. Smith and Garrett are at it. Hank Slaven has somebody down. Landon and
Slaven's hurt. Bill, they're calling for the trainer. And now Gambucci and Hurley, who are wrestling at center, come up. And now it's Smith and Garrett fighting. Wild scene here at the Civic Center as players in sticks and gloves all over the ice. The irony of the situation is Selwood and Brackenberry, who started it all, are now kind of just hugging each other at center ice, dancing around. But you're right, Bill. The despicable act by Bill Butters, sucker-punching Larry Plow. And now, here we go. We still got Smith and Garrett involved with Busnick and Ricky Lee. And Landon's out there with McCartan. And here we go again. It's
Smith and Garrett.
But Garrett hasn't taken off his mask. And now Nick and Carl come together. And now Nick wants Carlson. That's obvious.
This may be the main event. He was just holding off only two Saints, one in each hand. Oh, Carlson just called back Nick.
And Nick comes right back at him. Here they go. For Tio and Carlson. Look at them slugging each other.
And down here on the far right hand, Brackenberry and Selwood still having some comments, still taking some swings. It looks like Saturday night at Roseland in New York. Everybody's paired off. All the good guys in white and the other ones are in blue. And the linesmen, now Frenchie and Hampson are going at it. Selwood and Brackenberry. Bob, you watch the left-hand boards. I'll watch the right, and we'll just kind of override each other. How about that?
Well, now Butters and Swain are going at it. And Fred Smith now flailing away at Garrett. Right here is by Al Smith on John Garrett. Carlson and Fatia were separated. Nick's face is bloody. We've got a wild scene here in Hartford. And the irony of it all, look at the two trainers, Joe Altot and Glenn Gostick, just currently chirping at the line. Selwood and Brackenberry finally get rid of each other. We've got cuts and
Nick is cut. He's going right to the box after Carlson. He shrugs the linesman off, gets spun around, and now both linesmen are in front.
There's the first about 3 minutes, but it goes on another few, and in fact the thing reignites and there's another. I mean, it went on close to 10 minutes, and it included Nick Fatiu in the penalty box. And in fact, if you listen to the whole thing, down on the floor, the penalty box, it was, as a 15-year-old kid and a hockey fan, I had seen plenty of hockey fights, but nothing like that. And the fact that I will be able, you know, the rest of my life to go and listen to that. And this is off of YouTube, but I've got the 45. The Whalers put it on the backside of the Whaler theme song, Brass Bonanza, which Numi had actually suggested to them when he was in the publicity office, when they were still in Boston. They used to play in the arena, and then came to Hartford. And a part of my childhood that is just really, as I wrote, indelible to me. Randy Moss now joining us. And, of course, Randy's career, too, has got a lot of parallels to Bob Neumeier's, as well as being a colleague. Randy, versatile and used in Olympic coverage and football. And Randy, all morning, from Michael Blowen to Kenny Rice and Billy Rappaport and Jay Pribman and just now Edzo. So sorry about Bob Neumeier's passing.
Yeah, it's a sad weekend. You talk about the parallels between me and Numi. There's one parallel that not a lot of people know about, and it just speaks volumes as to what kind of person Numi was. In 1999, I had done some, for a few years, I'd been on the ESPN, handicapping the Derby shows and things like that. I'd done a lot of local TV, but I was in the newspaper business. And I got a phone call from ESPN right before the Preakness saying that they were in a bit of a bind and asking me if I could, since I was going to be there anyway for the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, if I could perform double duty and be an analyst for the ESPN telecasts that weekend from Pimlico. So I said, sure. And I was on the set. It was a two-person set. It was a girl that was the host named Sandra Neal, and it was me. And I was there all day Friday, and we did all the prelims on Saturday, including the race where Lee Chang ran out on the racetrack and took a swing at Artax. Sunday, I got a phone call from ESPN asking if I could meet with them. They flew me and my wife in Monday morning, offered me a job Monday afternoon. And it wasn't until 3 or 4 weeks later that I was told by somebody that the job I was taking was had been Bob Neumeier's. As it turned out, Newmy couldn't be at the Preakness that year because he was the radio play-by-play voice of the Boston Bruins. And the Bruins had just beaten the Carolina Hurricane in the quarterfinals, and they had advanced to the semifinals against Buffalo in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And Newmy was, you know, had a commitment to do that and couldn't do the Preakness. And then lo and behold, here's a young newspaper guy who comes in, and the next week I basically, you know, they had me take Newmy's place as the analyst for horse racing on ESPN. Now, Newmy had plenty of other irons in the fire. He's Bob Neumeier. I mean, you know, it had nothing to do with performance. I would work cheaper than Newmy because, you know, I was two rungs above the poverty level working in the newspaper business, so they could get me cheaper. But when I found out about it, I was really bothered because I had known Newmy just sort of superficially. And I mentioned something later to somebody that it really bothered me, and they said, hey, Newmy is your biggest fan. And he was, there was all kinds of opportunity professionally, and I've seen it a million times, for Newmy to treat me sort of standoffishly and or even some hostility. Instead, it was exactly the opposite. He was as kind and as gracious and as supportive and as nice to me that summer when he would be on the shows as a reporter. As anyone could possibly be. The same thing happened when Edzo probably, I wasn't listening, but Edzo probably related when he was joined, when he was hired to join Neumeier as a handicapper. It had been just Newmy, and now it's Newmy and Edzo, and Newmy welcomed Edzo with open arms and couldn't have been nicer to Edzo and took him under his wing. It's just the kind of guy that he was. You know, I mean, not a trace of ego anywhere. And for somebody that's as talented as Neumeier was, you don't see that often in the TV business. Somebody who could walk through the grandstand and people would, you know, come up to him and he would be as gracious as if he was, you know, just an absolute nobody. But I could go on forever about Newmy. He was, you know, it's not just that you never heard anybody say a bad thing about Bob Neumeier. It's that anytime anybody talked about Bob Neumeier, it was always what a great guy he was.
Echoing so many aspects, Randy, of the conversations that have come before, and also the comments all over the internet, and I started the morning, you know, kind of talking about his affability and
that's a perfect word, yeah,
right, his likability, and it came through on the radio and on TV, and that made him one of those people that fans and people that watched and listened, when you then would encounter him in person. I mean, and this is the real rarity, his graciousness and his, well, Nick Zito named Loquacious Bob, you know, after him, and the fact that he was never put out meeting people, and he embraced that, you know, that responsibility of being a deliverer of sports in whatever capacity that he was presenting.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, professionally, Newmy was immensely talented at whatever he did, whether it was play-by-play hockey that I don't know much about, but I'm told he was just outstanding at it, to reporting on the Olympics for NBC, obviously his horse racing chops that he had, even as a horse player when he won the World Series of Handicapping 30 years ago. I mean, Bob was the consummate professional at whatever he chose to do. But more importantly than that was just the kind of person he was. You know, I mean, there are a lot of people who are, can excel professionally at what they do. But, you know, you meet them behind the scenes and they're, you know, jerks. But Numi was just 180 degrees the opposite. You know, as you said, he was exactly, you know, people would discover that he's exactly the person when you meet him on the apron at Churchill Downs,
right,
as he was when you were watching him from home for all those years, and people gravitated to that for good reason.
One part that is really to me a remarkable professional quality is the ability to adapt to whatever the circumstance is, and as we've heard repeatedly today, the journalism chops and the the sports writer mentality and being a TV writer and writing script for when he was on WBZ, but that part of his delivery to me was what stands out. And I brought up with Billy Rappaport and with other of your colleagues that no matter what the network, and that includes all three majors as well as ESPN, no matter what the executive direction was of a broadcast, and there's been different priorities over the years for all presentation of racing, he adapted to whatever. If they wanted shtick, he could do shtick. But at the core of it, Randy, was a quality opinion. And that what really stands out to me about his TV work particularly.
Oh, yeah. And in horse racing, I mean, make no mistake, he was extremely knowledgeable about the sport. I'll never forget all those times. I'd be Jerry Bailey and I would be, two of the first people on the grounds for NBC, and we'd be sitting in the trailer like maybe on a Wednesday, and we'd been there since Monday, and we talked to trainers and everything. And Numi would come walking in the trailer, and we'd see him for the first time on, let's say, on Derby week. And, immediately the spirits would be elevated as soon as he walked in the room because of the kind of person he was. And then the first thing he wanted to do is sit down, and he had all the sheets, and he had already handicapped extensively, and he'd want to go through race by race and supplement what he saw on paper with what maybe some of the little nuggets that we had discovered talking to horsemen and stuff. Those were just amazing times, just to be able to sit down with Numi for an hour or two and every big race, and just go over all the horses and the card. And what you point out, how he could adapt to any to the intricacies of any particular assignment is a pretty astute observation, because it's difficult to do that. When Numi was a reporter for NBC, let's say that he's on the Triple Crown, all right? I mean, oftentimes it's like, okay, you've got 25 seconds to give this report, and you've got to convey facts A, B, C, and D. And if you take 35 seconds, you're in trouble. And he not only would hit every salient point in a perfect way, but he would do it with a delivery that was pretty much unmatched. He always had that kind of delivery where he was smiling, but he wasn't smiling, right? He had that friendly look on his face where, yes, you always, yep, thought that at any moment he could erupt with some, hysterically funny comment or some really funny story, that he was holding back something that was really funny that he knew that he wanted to tell you, you know, but he didn't really have time to tell you. And he would get all the facts, you know, in the process of doing that. When a race was run and he was on the track, he was always the guy that NBC wanted to be the one to interview, let's say the winning jockey or a jockey that was involved in some sort of incident as soon as they came off the track. And that's difficult to do in that situation because he had to be standing on the track during the running of the race. It's difficult to see exactly what transpires.
That's a great point. Yep.
When you're standing at trackside, you know, and sometimes, you know, this was even before the era where you had the huge big video boards in the infield that you could at least watch the race from a, you know, halfway decent vantage point. But we always knew somehow, some way, that when it came time to ask the jockey a certain question, I'd be like, ask the jockey, I hope he asks him this. I hope, boom, here it comes, the perfect question from Neumeyer. To get right to the heart of what, you know, everyone who was watching, you know, knew was the issue and what they wanted to hear. And Neumeyer would always be, you know, bingo. And then when he was a handicapper, whether it was by himself or with Mike Battaglia, or, you know, later with Edzo or whoever they would pair with Neumeyer, you would get great handicapping, but he would also be fun. He could do the shtick, as you pointed out, because he was extremely witty and had a fantastic sense of humor. And, you know, so he could pretty much handle anything that was thrown at him.
And you can, you know, you can fold that into the, you know, the number of colleagues that he was essentially paired with in all of the different booths and sets, right? Whether it's TV, you know, Bob LaBelle and his longtime radio sports talk show in Boston and Bill Rasmussen, what people listened to. And then later, I think Larry Plough ended up, before Plough went into coaching and management, he ended up with the Blues for a long time as their GM. But I think Larry Plough, I remember being in the booth as well. And you know, we've seen him paired with all these different, you know, all these different handicapper associates, and he was a chameleon that way. And he just got along. But he got along with everybody. So this shouldn't come as a surprise. But we should point out, Randy, it's not true of everybody, and there's plenty of chemistry issues when networks try to pair people up.
Oh, and I'm not going to name any names, and it's not, this didn't happen at NBC, but, you know, I know for a fact that Neumeyer was occasionally paired with people who shouldn't have had their jobs, who were borderline incompetent in what they were being asked to do, and Neumeyer was paired with them and at risk of making him look, you know, less than 100% by association. And yet, he never called him out on the air. He always sort of maneuvered his comments, you know, around what sort of inaccuracies he was hearing that were in the questions that were being posed to him and things like that. And, you know, you never would have suspected watching on the air that, you know, there was this sort of frustration that he had of having to deal with this on camera in front of, you know, hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of people. But he always navigated it beautifully, professionally. It didn't happen to him often, but it happened to him occasionally. And it was Bob Neumeyer, vintage Bob, that, you know, he handled it like a complete pro.
That's exactly the term I think I wrote yesterday when I expressed my, you know, my condolences. A consummate professional.
Yeah, exactly.
Randy, I appreciate this. Before we let you go, looking forward to the 2 weeks ahead and pre-entries today for Breeders' Cup and. Bob's waiting for him as much as anybody on Wednesday.
Yes, he would be, and he probably is, you know, somewhere. But it's I've been deep into the preparation already for a couple weeks, and any time you can go to Del Mar, even if it doesn't involve horse racing, I'm all in. So with the Breeders' Cup being back out there, it just makes it all the more special. Can't wait.
We will see you early next week. It's kind of hard to believe it's upon us, but looking forward. I'll head out on Saturday myself, and we'll see you there. Thanks so much for this, though, Randy Moss. There's so many people. I could just leave an open mic and let people, you know, come up and pay tribute for hours on end.
I really appreciate the opportunity. I wish it was under better circumstances, but, you know, thanks for letting me at least share some of my feelings about Newman. Fantastic.
Outstanding. Thank you, Randy. Randy Moss, everybody. And you can follow Randy on Twitter, of course, if you're not. I'm sure most of you are, but if you're not, Randy Moss TV. And that I was not aware of that backstory between Randy, ESPN. But that's a great behind the curtain picture of him as the kind of person he was. No animosity, no grudge to hold, no nothing. He really, I'm glad Randy told that story. Lafitte Benkai the third will close us out, and we'll have about little under 15 to spend with LP3, and like everybody else, I mean, there's nobody on this list today that joined us that I'm not, you know, delighted to have, just not under these circumstances, and that includes Lafitte, who joins us now to pay tribute to Bob Newme. And Lafitte, so sorry that we have to say goodbye.
Steve, how are you?
All right.
Yesterday was that was a gut punch. You wake up, and I think we've been subconsciously trained that when you wake up to X amount of text messages and missed calls, that, you know, kind of a internal panic alarm goes off, and to read the first couple and to recognize what had happened and that we had lost Newme over the course of the weekend. I had spoken with him last maybe a little over a year ago, Steve. You know, he had had some medical issues over the years. I did not know he had gone. He was in hospice, and that things had deteriorated so quickly. So it wasn't, you know, sometimes when people are very ill, people close in your life, I think you consciously or subconsciously start to prepare yourself, and I wasn't prepared to to learn of his passing.
Jay also had explained that, and then as part of the Globe obituary, it does figure that he wouldn't want everybody, you know, aware, right? That not dissimilar from everyone's reaction with Norm Macdonald, who was of the same mind, didn't want anyone to know how sick he was, and that comes to mind now too. But it sort of didn't give us a chance to. Maybe he didn't want that. Maybe he didn't want a parade of people, reaching out and saying goodbye that way.
It would be, that would be very much Newme telling everyone to get over it. He's going to watch the Patriots pace the Jets from somewhere smiling, and would want much more of it's a celebration of life. That was just his personality. Absolutely, selfless in that regard. again, as brilliant as he was as a broadcaster, a better person. And I just, from working with him, you know, this is someone I watched and admired from a distance for many years. He came around and started covering horse racing at the network level, you know, right about the time as a teenager that I actually started paying attention. In fact, his first assignment, I believe, at the network level for NBC was that 1990 Breeders' Cup, and one of the first interviews or reports he had to handle was the distaff and the tragic breakdown of Gopher Wand and that stretch duel with Byakoa, and as you might imagine, handled it with grace and class while at the same time providing all of the facts to the viewer so that the viewer who isn't following horse racing on a day-to-day basis could understand what had happened. And sometimes when you do admire somebody from a distance for their ability, perhaps you respect someone because they're really good and talented at they're gifted as an athlete or as a performer of some regard. Bob Neumeyer was somebody who I watched and just, wow, he made it look easy. And when he would appear on a horse racing broadcast, you knew it was an important, significant broadcast. He made the event seem that much bigger. But then sometimes you'll meet someone and maybe you're a little disappointed because they're not quite the same person they are when the lights are on, right? They're no longer performing. Mm-hmm. Having the opportunity to work with Bob, and actually the first time I met him was the first time I worked with him, was in 2011. And he's the same guy. He was the exact same guy. And yep. How cool that is when you hold somebody in such high regard to learn that they are as genuine, just as people as they are talented at whatever it is that they might do. In this case, you know, one of the best, you know, broadcasters in sports that we've had over the last, you know, several decades.
And that's been, I started the show with a similar thought, and it's been echoed repeatedly. And for me, I played a cut of that Whalers broadcast. As a kid, that Bob Neumeyer was a voice on the radio and a face on television. And so, you know, to get to know him 30 years later, it's pretty special. And there certainly have been. I've been doing this now, you know, it's 15, 16 years. And even before that, you know, when I came on the racetrack, through the concession side of things, I certainly was intimidated by certain people, both on the training side and the media side as well. And so a lot of time you work through it, and you break the ice and it goes from there. He was just so genuine, and there was no need to be nervous with Numi. It's just amazing. It's a quality that somehow could be taught or bottled. It would be really invaluable, but it has to come from within.
Love, you would find him, you know, that's, you would find him in the backyard at Saratoga, for example, hanging out with the handicappers, and, you know, that's what he, that's the part of the game, and such, how much he loved the handicapping, how much we would look forward to the segments with he and Mike Battaglia and he and Eddie Olczyk. He had this calming effect of which he would kind of remind everyone, because you get, you know, when you're getting ready for a Derby, a Preakness, a Belmont, it can be, you know, there's a lot of eyeballs. It can be, you know, it can get a little, it can get tense. You can get nervous. You can, you know, start to press a little bit, and there was a calming effect that he had, even when it was in rehearsal or when you're actually going through. I remember the first derby I appeared on, the first year I worked with NBC, it was, you know, NBCSN wasn't even NBCSN yet, it was Versus, and I just worked the undercard the first year. The actual first NBC broadcast was the following year in 12, and I remember how nervous I was when they were going around for the first whip around introducing the reporters, and how fortunate I felt that Neumeier, that Bob was right. He was right before I was. And even though I couldn't see him, you can hear someone smile, right? Over just in the tone of their voice.
Mm-hmm.
And he would kind of remind you, like, it's okay to laugh. It's okay to smile. It's okay to have fun. And this incredible calming effect that he would have, just kind of reminding you to take a deep breath. We're not curing cancer. We're telling stories about horse racing. And that was really his gift. I mentioned this in a tweet yesterday, as if you were at home, you really did feel like he was like talking to you directly and just simply telling you a story and how gifted he was at doing just that, and very concisely with a, you know, 45-second window to work with, that he could tell you a story. And in the end, the reporter's job in that particular, at the top of the show, it's always, you know, give the viewer a reason to care. And because of a story Numi would have told during the course of a broadcast, whether the horse was 4-5 or 45-1, you're paying attention to that horse because he's done his job. He's given you a reason to care about how that horse is going to perform in that particular race because of the story that he may have told, you know, an hour prior.
We've had the really both sides of the camera appreciate it, and I've had the opportunity to, you know, kind of see the, you know, post broadcast when everybody starts to decompress and I suppose he had the least to decompress from, because you never had a sense that he was under pressure. That's some quality to have as a broadcaster in high pressure situations.
If he did, he concealed it well. Again, there are some that appear in the highest of pressure situations, or that you associate with a high level of pressure, that he would, again, just remind you that it's okay. It's okay to laugh. It's okay to make fun of someone. It's okay to joke around a little bit. And that's why, you know, going back to the early days of the Breeders' Cup and the NBC coverage, and how much we would look forward to the segments with Harvey Pack. And I think he appeared with Jay Randolph a couple of years, and he kind of had that same aura about him, where things would really like kind of lighten up when it would come to that segment. And the same with Numi and Mike Battaglia, and Numi with Eddie Olczyk. If he was pressing like a duck on a pond before the whether it was in rehearsal or during the broadcast themselves. And that sort of thing is contagious. Whether it's somebody really starting to grip it and tighten up, that sort of nervous energy can proliferate, you know, through the trailer and you know, amongst the broadcasters themselves, or somebody like him who just had that, you know, he just breathe, smile, tell a story, and that was for myself, just getting started, that was key, because he was so welcoming from the time that, you know, that I arrived. And when it came to whether it was advice or could you take a look at this report or, you know, a certain question I was going to ask someone, and he had an incredible ability to listen. So often is the case, you're getting ready for your next question and you're getting ready to hand it back to, you know, throw it back to fill in the blank. And there was one case in particular, and I'm not going to get into the details of what race it was and who said what, but Bob Neumeier is being told, you know, get it back to Tom Hammond or get it back to Bob Costas. This is on the biggest of stages. And the subject he was interviewing had just won, you know, the biggest race in the world. And he said something profound.
Mm.
And it would have been very easy, you know, the interview subject, oh, well, aliens landed on my backyard last night. All right, you know, back to you, Bob. Okay, you know, this is a bomb was dropped, and he's being told, and he stopped. And he stopped in the middle of the interview, even though he's being told to get it back to Bob or Tom. He's like, wait, what? And it was so subtle, but because he's so present and in the moment and listening, which is, in those moments, easy, you know, it's easier than it, but tougher than it sounds. And if a viewer at home is simply watching, it would have been, wait, what did that, what was that guy talking about? And Bob had the presence of mind and the poise to stop in that very moment, follow up, and then get it back to, you know, as the broadcast would continue. But that was one of those moments, so subtle, which is still that we're reminded of, and it's still taught when it comes to, you know, before the Triple Crown. Like, Rudy, here's the perfect example, just listening. And that's something he was so good at and following up with quickly, acting. And just one small example of how gifted of a broadcaster he was.
Lafitte Benkai III, everybody, and we'll talk to Lafitte from Del Mar next week. Lafitte, thank you.
Anytime. Steve, thanks so much.
Lafitte Benkai, along with Randy Moss, Ed Olchek, Mike Welch, Jay Privman, Billy Rappaport, Kenny Rice, and Michael Blow, and paying tribute to Bob Neumeier. Thanks, Billy. We'll send you out into the day and more tomorrow, including a lot more weekend recapping. Want to thank Mig, of course, as well, from today's coverage. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 3-8-4-6-4-3.